Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Jeff. This is The Rant. Shenanigans indeed today on the show. I actually wanted to cover a topic that comes up a lot regarding the draft board. Remember, you can get my draft boards over at ftnfantasy.com. The promo code RATPACK will get you 10% off. Got a draft this weekend. Hey, I'm using my draft board. You can too, or you can use some of the other. We have 16 cheat sheets total, including the tiers cheat sheet. A lot of people like that. I don't tier-based draft, but hey, I put out different sheets because I know everybody drafts differently. FTNFantasy.com. But as part of Draft Board 2.0, I have columns in the late round for players I'm avoiding. And when I say avoid, people are often like, well, what if they were like two or three rounds later? It's like, yeah, but I'm still avoiding them. There are players who I don't want. And this is by design, because in the late rounds, I'm really searching for ceiling. Like, I want to get as much bang for my buck as possible, and I realize I'm not going to hit on all these players. Like, I know there's that mindset sometimes that people will have. It's this, like, extreme confidence that some fantasy players will have. I get it, too. Like, hey, when I submit a DFS lineup on, Sunday morning, Sunday, like, early afternoon for the Millie Maker slate, I'm like, yeah, this is a winner. It never wins. Of course not. We have that artificial inflated sense of self-confidence, but the reality is, nobody out there is going to hit on every single late round guy. And really, if I hit on one or two, I'm happy. So if I want to hit on them, I want to get that bang for my buck. I want to get the high ceiling, and it's okay if I miss. So there are players who don't offer that, or they come with question marks or something along those lines that really don't give me that bang for my buck. So I wanted to take a quick look at the draft board today and run through. I'll start with wide receiver, the late round avoid guys. There are two columns when you get to the late rounds. There are targets, there are voids. So let me start 10th round grade. And remember, 10th round grade doesn't mean that's where he has to be drafted. And this draft board, by the way, it can be used for a 10-team league. It can be used a 12-team, 14, 16, 8. Doesn't matter. It still applies across the board. That was the objective. I wanted to create something that could be used for any scoring system and any size league. You know, apply it across the board. Keep it as simple as possible. There's so many other things to think about when we play fantasy football. Thinking about those little nuances, it's only going to serve to confuse us as opposed to, you know, helping us make the best decisions. So that's why the draft board is what it is. All right, 10th round grade, Mike Williams. There's touchdown upside with Mike Williams, but there's also a good bit of concern with him coming back from the injury, with him being up there in age. I don't mind him playing with Aaron Rodgers, but overall in this spot, I think he can do better elsewhere in terms of ceiling. The other two players in the 10th round grade range of my draft board, Jacoby Myers and Josh Palmer. Myers, I think that's fairly self-explanatory. If there's one player I want from that roster, it's Devontae Adams. If there's a second, maybe if I miss at wheelhouse tight end, then it's Brock Bowers. Otherwise, I'm not too interested in Jacoby Myers. With Josh Palmer, again, it's more like if I'm going to take a shot on somebody, it's Ladd McConkey. I don't have a lot of confidence in him being the number one, him being Josh Palmer. I don't really have that much confidence in the wide receiver group as a whole, and I do expect the team to be very, very run heavy, so that's why I've been fading him in anything other than best ball. In best ball, I'm going to have exposure to pretty much all these guys, and I do, but not in redraft. Redraft, I want bang for my buck in the late rounds. Best ball, I'm willing to get exposure because you never quite know what's going to happen. You don't have to worry about starting lineups. You don't have to worry about waivers, all of that. It's just a different game. Starting off the 11th round with two Buffalo Bills, Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel. I know Shakir's got some buzz as somebody who is, you know, like I don't want to say sleeper, but like a late round target. Honestly, I'm not seeing it. He's not playing in two wide receiver sets in the preseason. Those are valuable reps that, of course, it could change when we get to the regular season. But a lot of times the preseason does give us an indicator of what the depth chart is going to look like, the pecking order is going to look like. He doesn't get those reps. There's not much value there. And likewise for Curtis Samuel, I mean, he's currently hurt. So that's a bit of a red flag. He's a week to week. I mean, yes, he has a little bit of juice, but if I'm really getting a Buffalo Bills pass catcher, either it's Dalton Kincaid as one of the wheelhouse tight ends, or it's Keon Coleman. And I know there's some risk with Keon Coleman, and there might be some expectations that he may not meet early in the season, but he is playing every down in the preseason. He's got that size. He's got that ability, especially as a red zone option, I think makes him particularly interesting. The three other players with a round 11 grade in my avoids list, Rashid Shaheed, Gabe Davis, Adam Thielen. Shaheed is hurt right now as well. I don't see the volume. Like, does he have a high ceiling? Sure, but I just don't see the volume being consistent. And it's the same argument for Gabe Davis. If I'm going to take a shot there, it would be Brian Thomas, not Gabe Davis. Now you have to draft Brian Thomas earlier, but I think we know what we're getting with Davis at this point. And then as for Adam Thielen, we saw him get out of the gate hot last year. 34-year-old receiver, though. Not much firepower with that, especially later in the season. I tend to avoid those older wide receivers for that reason. Then around 12 grades, I have DeMario Douglas and Jahan Dotson in the avoid column. Pop Douglas just doesn't have a high ceiling, and I really don't know what to do with those wide receivers. So really the only piece of the Patriots that I'm getting in regular leagues is Ramondre Stevenson if he gets out of the dead zone. As for Dotson, it's concerning when we enter the preseason, training camp preseason, we being the fantasy community, viewing him as the number two receiver, and then you hear their head coach saying they're searching for their number two receiver. Not good. He faded last year after a pretty promising rookie season, came back to the pack last year, and not in a good situation right now. Josh Downs and Kendrick Bourne in the 13th round with 13th round grades. Downs is currently hurt and, you know, as a slot receiver doesn't offer a lot of upside. Like A.D. Mitchell would offer much more upside. Obviously, we like Michael Pittman, but he's not in consideration in the late rounds for sure. I actually do have A.D. Mitchell in the target column in round 13. As far as Kendrick Bourne, we don't know when he's going to get back on the field. And even then, how high is the ceiling in that offense? You know, same argument I just made about Pop Douglas. Lot of round 14 grade guys that are avoids for me. Wandale Robinson, Elijah Moore, Darius Slayton, Tyler Boyd. Let's focus on the Giants guys first. I mean, part of that is Daniel Jones. Like, it's not a deterrent in terms of Malik Nabers, but for Wandale, low ceiling, he's not going to see very valuable downfield targets. Slayton may see those, but the week-to-week variance with him, and he's even competing for, you know, with Jalin Hyatt for the number three job. So there's not much there. Elijah Moore essentially is going to be the number four if things stick with Cedric Wilson. And then Tyler Boyd doesn't offer much of a ceiling. The last round on my 2.0 board is last round grade is round 15. I have Marvin Mims, Greg Dortch, and Quentin Johnston in this range. I think Quentin Johnston's fairly self-explanatory. We have no clue what's happening with those wide receivers, especially after what I noted yesterday with Brendan Rice. I had somebody hit me up about Dynasty and was like, is he a must add? I was like, we have no clue. Like, we have no idea if Brendan Rice is going to be a starter, if he's going to be a reserve, like, or even a practice squad guy. Like, all options are on the table, and the team has not told us one way or the other. As far as Marvin Mims, does not look like he's going to be a starter at the beginning of the season. So if you're drafting him, you're probably drafting a guy basically for like November, which means you're drafting a guy you're going to drop in late September and somebody else is going to pick up in November. Greg Dortch, not a lot of juice with him in redraft leagues. Like, if you're getting a piece of that offense, again, redraft leagues, like, it's a small player pool, relatively speaking. So the players to target, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Trey McBride in that offense. And then Michael Wilson would be the late round guy, not Dortch. So those are the wide receivers. I don't have a ton of tight ends, so let me rip through these quickly. In round 12, I have TJ Hockenson. He's just an avoid because we have no idea when he's going to come back, and that is a problem. So I don't want to suck up a bench spot or an IR spot with him. Hunter Henry, as much as I used to love Hunter Henry, he's shown that he's a touchdown-dependent guy with a very low yardage ceiling, and that makes him tough to rely on week in and week out. Finally, rounds 15, I have round 15 grades on Tyler Conklin and Chiga Conquo. Conklin has a high floor, but he showed us the last three seasons, like, that's all he has. He doesn't really have a high ceiling. And I know some people were going after him in best ball, which is fine. Best ball is totally different. But redraft, it's such a tricky position, especially with a guy like him. If he doesn't score a touchdown in a given week, he's not going to be a good start. Chiga Conquo, we just don't quite know if he's going to turn the corner this season, and, you know, part of that is obviously there's a lot of mouths to feed all of a sudden in Tennessee. All right, let me rip through the running backs. Round 10, I have two Cleveland guys, Nick Chubb, Jerome Ford. No idea when Nick Chubb's going to be back. No clue. None whatsoever. And it's the same argument as TJ Hockenson. And then for Jerome Ford's sake, yeah, he'll be involved as long as Nick Chubb isn't there. And he'll be involved even when Nick Chubb comes back. But how much Deontay Foreman or Pierre Strong is going to be used, there's just no telling here. I'd rather avoid the situation altogether. Round 11, I have Chuba Hubbard. So when is Jonathan Brooks going to be back is like my main question there. I'm not loving Chuba Hubbard. You know, he's a classic just a guy type. Maybe there's some Miles Sanders, but even especially when Jonathan Brooks is back, he's going to be the lead back in that backfield. Moving on to round 12, Antonio Gibson and Jaleel McLaughlin. McLaughlin could go either way. I know he's a bit of a buzz pick for some of the zero RB folks out there. I just don't know if there's enough meat on the bone for my liking at running back because he is an undersized back. So that is something to consider with him. And Antonio Gibson's just a pass catcher at this point in his career. So we have another volume issue with him. I don't have anybody in round 13. I actually don't have anybody in round 15 as running back, late round avoids. It's just targets in that range, which is good. But I do have two guys in round 14, Roschon Johnson and Justice Hill. It seems like Roschon Johnson pulled ahead of Khalil Herbert in the pecking order in that backfield, although my full anticipation is DeAndre Swift is the clear lead. Why I say Roschon has pulled ahead is he didn't play in this past preseason game, which was the Bears' third preseason game. It was just Khalil Herbert. So I switched those guys in terms of rankings, but it still doesn't make me particularly optimistic about Roschon at this point. Again, I'm not sure there's going to be volume there, and DeAndre Swift is not ranked high enough for me to actually handcuff him. As for Justice Hill, pass catching back, I mean, we know what Justice Hill is at this point. The early down volume is going to go to Derrick Henry. If Derrick Henry went down with injury, I just don't see there's enough meat on the bone for Justice Hill. It's not like he's going to take that role and be a true handcuff. That's just not the type of player he is. So all of those guys, like, yes, even if they fall, okay, so let's say Jahan Dotson, I have a round 12 grade on him. It's round 15. He's still on the board. Do I want to take him? No, I do not. I just don't like the overall profile. And knowing the profile of players is very important. Now, does that mean you shouldn't take him? I can't answer that. I'm not you. I don't know. Like, maybe you say, no, he is a target for me, or any one of these players that I just mentioned. I'm just trying to talk you through my rationale. And I do think you should apply the same rationale to your draft boards. Like, if you're there on draft day and you say, no, I think he's a target. All right, we'll move him over to the target column. Or if you have somebody who I have as a target you don't want, then move him over to the avoid. Like, there's nothing worse than drafting a player you don't want to draft. It almost seems like so obvious, but yet so many fantasy managers, that doesn't occur to them. They draft players because they have a set of rankings, and then there's the guy who they don't want to draft, but he's highest in rankings, so therefore they draft him, and then they're always disappointed as a result. So take command over your draft board. All right, so we're going to move on. I have plenty of questions in the hopper in terms of email, so we'll be back with email questions from you after this. All right, and we're back. I am loaded up with email questions from you guys. I actually have a voicemail or two as well to play here in a minute, but if you want to email the show, therantpodjr@gmail.com. Our buddy H. Patel checking in has a stacking question. He did email us a couple shows back. He said, I think you mentioned before that quarterback wide receiver stacking is fine for best ball, and in redraft, I avoid tight end stacking. No, that's not exactly what I said. Well, I'll clarify after I get through his question. He said, how do you feel about running back wide receiver stacking in redraft? Okay, well, let me answer that one first. I hate it. I don't want negative correlation there. And what I mean by that is, if the running back goes off, like if it's a running back game, chances are the receivers don't go off. Now, sure, it could be Miami and they put up 70 points in a game, but that's the exception, not the rule. Generally speaking, if one position is going off on a team, then the other isn't. So I avoid that. I don't want that. And that is something you have to be conscious of. That's another reason why maybe you don't want to have too many adult beverages during drafts for anybody out there. But it is something I'm conscious of. As far as quarterback wide receiver stacking, well, stacking technically, you're talking about a pairing. Stacking is when you have multiple players from the team of one of the quarterbacks you're rostering. So it could be two wide receivers and a running back, two wide receivers and a tight end, a wide receiver and a tight end, any of those pairings. So Brock Purdy, Deebo Samuel, and George Kittle. Brock Purdy, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, and George Kittle. That's a stack. A pairing is Brock Purdy and Deebo Samuel. And I will not go out of my way to do that in redraft. If it happens, fine. It is not a priority. But in best ball, it's a must. That's what it is, an absolute must, because you're trying to win a tournament. You're not trying to just beat the other 11 teams in your league. So he mentions a couple of them here, like McCaffrey and Deebo. Yeah, I would avoid that. Bijan and Drake London, I'd avoid that. Tyreek and Achane or Tyreek and Mostert, yeah, I'd avoid that. I would. In redraft. Robert, auction draft team build from Robert here. He said he loves the pod. Appreciate that. He says, got me listening to the radio show again. Normally it's the other way around, man. It's definitely different on the radio show. On the radio show, I'm playing like a character, a caricature version of myself. All the worst parts of myself. Here, I'm just being Jeff. But anyway, he says 12-team PPR auction, four wide receiver starting spots. Oh, so it's not four. It's two wide receivers and two flex. He is keeping Alvin Kamara very cheap. He said, I'm comfortable waiting on my RB2 until I've filled my other roster spots. Well, you won't know in an auction if you... Sometimes opportunity will strike in an auction. So I wouldn't necessarily take that approach, or you could leave yourself way too thin. He said Mostert is going very cheap. Thoughts on drafting him and targeting Jalen Wright with a bench spot? I wouldn't do that. Mostert is not cuffable for me. The handcuff rules, even though I draft differently in auction, and I have a whole auction strategy article at ftnfantasy.com. It is paywalled, so you have to be a subscriber, but I break down everything that I do in an auction. The handcuffing rules don't change, even though auction strategy is different. So I would not be handcuffing Raheem Mostert or Alvin Kamara for that matter. I'm still only handcuffing the anchor guys. All right, Matt, three wide receiver league draft strategy clarification. Very precise subject there from Matt. He said he won three championships in the last 5 years. Good. That's tough, man. It's tough to win a fantasy championship. He said he wants to clean up the fact that he drafts a grenade or two every year. Well, we all do that. That's going to be hard to get away from. He said, I think the dynamic zero and hero RB approaches are going to be what keeps him on track. I agree. Question about strategy of waiting until the seventh if I end up going zero RB. He said, wouldn't this mean you're drafting more wide receivers than you have starting spots in a three wide receiver plus one flex league? Does that not create some back and forth in terms of who do I start dilemma? I just want to get a little more insight instead before he takes five wide receivers and a tight end before his first running back. Yeah, it makes sense. So yes, I am taking more than I have starting spots, but you need more than you have starting spots. I think for so long, a lot of fantasy drafters, and even to this day for a lot of folks out there, I saw it in my home league draft this past week, people think of starters and bench, but I'll say this till I'm blue in the face. If you're drafting bench players for your bench, you're drafting bench players, guys who should not be starters. I want starters on my bench. So in this instance here, yeah, if I have five wide receivers, my fifth wide receiver could start on any other team. Great. I'm okay with that because bye weeks will come around, injuries will happen, and maybe I miss on one of my top four, you know, one of those grenades that we're talking about here. So I'm totally okay with that. He said, does it not create some back and forth in terms of who do you start? Not for me, it doesn't. Now, I know I'm really boring when it comes to start sit, but that's by design. I don't want to have to make decisions. So what I do is, you know, I have rankings every single week. Those rankings, I get off the air at CBS at noon. CBS Sports Network, the TV show ends at noon. I get in a car and am driven back to my house. It's about an hour and 45 minute drive. But in that car, I have my little Wi-Fi hotspot, my laptop open, and I'm updating rankings. And they lock my final set of rankings at FTN at 12:30. I quickly go through. Usually, I don't really have any that are back and forth. But if I had any guys that were close in rankings before that point, I just make a little note for which leagues to go through. Because it's impossible to go through all of them in that 30-minute time period because I'm in a bunch of leagues. Either way, finish it based on who's ranked highest. And then there's really no dilemma. Even if a guy, like one guy's at 27, one guy's at 28, I'm going to start the guy at 27 every time, every single time. Am I going to be right every time? No. And guess what? If I'm wrong, that's okay, because I stuck to the process, and it's more about process than it is results. If you stick to a good process long enough, you're going to have good results over that long term. Now, if you have a bad process, different story. He said he would prefer that his name not be used. Well, I didn't use your whole name there. And honestly, what does it matter? He doesn't want his league mates to know. I get this type of question all the time. Like, well, aren't you worried that your league mates are going to use your draft board? No, not worried about that at all. And this is the same thing. Like, I had one dude on the FTN podcast say, he gave the podcast a 1-star rating, and he said, I'm rating it this way so that none of my league mates find out about it. And it's like, bro, like, come on. There is enough love to go around here. And if you notice, I'm not the type of fantasy analyst who tries to reveal the secrets to the universe to you by telling you all of my favorite players. That doesn't work. It really doesn't. And, you know, what happens if I hit on those guys? Great. You're going to love me forever until I don't hit on guys, and then you're going to hold it against me forever. So instead, let's just set an order of players and stick to strategies, and we're going to draft good rosters. There, some years, maybe you may hit on a few more than others, but you're going to be competitive every single year if you have a good process. And that doesn't matter if your league mates know about it. You know, there's no one player I have to walk out of a draft with. It's not like I have the secret list of players and people in my home leagues can't find out about them. I don't care. All of this stuff is tools, like draft board, my rankings, any of that. That's a tool. And a tool is only as good as the user. Like, tool doesn't exist by itself. The user has to use it. I would say if you put me on the same golf course, same clubs with Rory McIlroy, he's going to smoke me. Like, not even close smoke me. Like, destroy me. Destroy, destroy, destroy. I'm an okay golfer. Not that great, but I can hold my own. Dude would destroy me with the same tool. Draft board can be the same way. Appreciate you, Matt. Sean has a hero RB/keeper question. Okay. Longtime follower. Appreciate you, Sean. So he's in a 12-team league, 2 keepers. Each one has a 2-round penalty, so a 2-round escalation. He got Kyren and Laporta, 13th and 14th rounders. Good stuff. So he has his hero RB, his anchor RB. He said, I know in hero RB, you normally say draft non-running backs until the 7th round. In this scenario where 24 players are being kept, do you go back to the RB well earlier in the 7th? No. Keepers are draft picks that you make before the draft. So it's still the same amount of players off the board. I'm still taking the same exact approach. In your instance, you have guys who are kept after that period, but I bet there are players who are kept before round 7 as well. So I keep the same exact strategy. You're going to be quite robust there for sure, but I do keep the same strategy. Now, that's me. And again, it's me, because you did ask me. If it's you and you want to adjust the strategy, do so. Just make sure you have a good reason to do so. You know, that if you're just doing it because you think, feel, or believe, that usually is not the best reason, usually, in my experience. But if you have a good reason for doing so, then go for it. But that is how I tend to approach it. And yes, I will be quite robust at wide receiver in that type of a league. All right, Tony up next in the keeper league. Oh my God. His font is humongous. It looks like I'm looking at a billboard on my screen right now. All right, he says he's a longtime Rat Pack creep. Shout out to the creeps out there. It's a term of endearment. He said he listens year-round. Appreciate that. I am one year-round. All right. 2 separate leagues, 1 quarterback, redraft, and they are keepers. They do live drafts. League 1, he has pick 1-1. He's taking McCaffrey. He is keeping Laporta in the 12th. He said, however, he was offered a draft pick trade. He would get Puka for his 10th-round pick. That's not the trade. That's where he would be able to keep him. He said, using the trade value chart, it would mean either giving up his 210 or his 3-1. I don't know. That's a lot to give up in this league. If there were more keepers, I would maybe consider it, but I'm not quite sure I would want to do this. I would probably hold off, but ultimately, yeah, again, it comes down to you. If it was me, I tend to not do these types of trades very often in keeper leagues. Second league, he's only keeping 1. He's got the 1-2. He said he's keeping CJ Stroud in the 10th. I'm really hesitant here of keeping a quarterback in a one quarterback league. So I'm just going to toss that out here first and foremost. But to answer your question, Tony, you said, should I target a QB2 safe and upside in the round, rounds 11 through 15, or just roster build? So you have, if you have a top 12-ish guy, I say top 12, but technically it's really up to Brock Purdy. You don't need a second quarterback. There's no reason to draft another quarterback. So I would stay put, but I would really seriously consider keeping a non-quarterback. You showed last year you can draft a quarterback in the late rounds and be just fine with CJ Stroud. Let's move over to Keith. Keith has auction advice is his question. What's my advice on auction drafts? Well, I have a whole article that breaks down everything that you need to know at ftnfantasy.com. I'm not going to get into that's like an entire show, and I'm just not going to do that on this podcast. But he said, for auctions, do you come up with scenarios for getting certain players? No, I don't. Do you stick rigidly to your splits for budget allocation? I do. If anything, I go under. So for example, this last auction I went 5% at tight end. I had basically 5 to 10% allocated, and I went 3% at quarterback. So I was actually able to throw more at wide receiver, and I got good values at running back, so I was even able to throw more at wide receiver. So it ended up being something like 53% at wide receiver. Do the math from there. Was mid-30s was the percentage that I spent on running back. But again, 10 auction tips, basically everything you need to know, the entire strategy at ftnfantasy.com. Promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Justin, Superflex running back dead zone. He said, one quarterback league. The dead zone ends at the end of round 6, so you could potentially start hammering in 7, 8, 9. That's true if you go zero RB. If you go hero RB, sometimes I find myself still drafting a wideout in round 7, and then I go to round 8 for running back. He said, in Superflex, would you be inclined to make it last one more round? It's possibly two more rounds. It really depends on how many quarterbacks go early. So it would either be round 8 or 9. It's definitely not round 7, but it would be either round 8 or 9. I've done both in the past. So it does move there. The sole reason is because of how many quarterbacks are drafted early in the draft. Glenn, tight end wheelhouse and tight end premium leagues. All right, I know what he's going to ask before I even open the email up. Do you move tight ends up? So here's the deal. In a tight end premium league, I am less likely to go tight end wheelhouse. Fortunately, I don't play in a lot of these leagues, but I'm less likely to go tight end wheelhouse. So before I even read his question, let's just get that out there. I'm much more likely to just go late round tight end and punt the position. Tight end premium really isn't premium. Like, it doesn't put tight ends at a premium. It just kind of boosts up the top guys, but I still don't feel the need to draft one, and they end up going earlier than I think they should. All right, so here's what he says. If you're in a 12-team league, 1.5 per reception for tight ends, he said your wheelhouses are all off the board by the early fourth round. One or two are left. Do you grab one of the last wheelhouse tight ends or continue on with wide receivers? So I'm still going to look in the fifth round. This is me. This is how I approach it. If you see it differently, then yeah, you could potentially consider it there. But I do find that I cost myself at wide receiver, which is the one position I'm really not willing to cost myself with in drafts. I really want to be as robust as possible. So yeah, I get that question a lot. Google gave me a security alert. Just kidding. It says new sign in. I guess I signed it. You know how they do that sometimes? Anyway, Sean, keeper value. He said overall rankings versus three rounds of value. All right. Middle round value quarterback strategy. I don't take this approach. This is, by the way, before I even answer this question, it's only something I'm going to use in 16 team leagues or greater. I'm not using it anywhere else. I said, I mentioned not taking a quarterback until I have two or three rounds of value. Well, I think you're quoting something old. It's three rounds of value on an elite quarterback. So right now, Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts, they have fourth round grades for me. They'd have to be there in the seventh for me to consider them. And Mahomes and Lamar would have to be there in the eighth. They're never getting there, so it is what it is. He said, wondering if you should add those onto the overall rankings of quarterbacks when using the keeper value chart. No, their value is their value. I would not be doing anything else there. I'm valuing them appropriately, but I'm viewing them differently within the context of strategy. That's when I'm applying strategy to a board, my draft board. I'm not just blindly drafting off the draft board.
I don't build rosters very well that way. Maybe you guys can. I can't. I'm not good at that. So no, I would not add anything to those guys. Like he said, he has CJ Stroud's value as 75 overall. I just updated rankings. I don't know if it's there right now. So if you check him after the podcast that you listen and he's not there, don't fault me. He said as of 8:17. No, I would not be doing any of that. His value is his value. John, he has an offensive line question. Nice. He said he's curious how much I consider offensive line and player projections. It's one of the most important aspects of football, but isn't widely discussed. It's not really that predictive, believe it or not. It is pretty wild. Like we're going to see relatively sticky numbers for these guys year over year. When it comes to efficiency, certain players are going to be more effective when they get down to the goal line region than others. You know, like Gus Edwards was very effective last year. Tony Pollard wasn't. And that is more of a player-based thing than an offensive line thing. So believe it or not, over the years of doing all this research, offensive line isn't a very big component. I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear, but it isn't. If anything, I would consider maybe if offensive linemen are hurt or if defensive linemen are hurt, but otherwise not a major consideration, believe it or not. Guys, also, the rantpodjr at gmail.com is not a customer service email. Okay, if you have customer service questions over at ftnfantasy.com, we have a customer service over there. So don't come here. I won't be rude, but this isn't customer service, all right? Charlie, keeper question. He said he's in a 10-team league, one quarterback, two wideout, two running back. Oh, so you play on Yahoo because you listed in that order. One flex kicker and a defense. He can keep McBride in the 10th or Pittman in the 10th. This is easy. It's Pittman all day long. Easy for me. And he has Ayuk in the 7th. Ayuk and Pittman are now close in rankings. I moved Ayuk down not because I'm worried about the contract stuff. I'm just adjusting to the market. So I would go Pittman there because the value is pretty good. It's not a huge difference between him and Ayuk, but yeah, easy for me. Pittman right now, call it a day. I do think Ayuk's ultimately going to sign here soon. I do think it's actually going to happen very soon. Okay, let's do some voicemails here. It does look like I actually have a couple, so let me get into the first one.
Hey, Jeff. Steven from Wisconsin here, just wanting to ask you a couple quick questions. First of all, fan of the show, fan of the podcast, FTN subscriber, complete loser. Anyways, I was wondering if you might be able to touch more on auction draft strategies for redraft leagues. And how you're able to kind of stick to the budget allocations that you have in place. I did read the article that you have on FTN, and then I was wondering just kind of hear your thoughts on strategies, how you implement the zero RB, zero RB strategies with that budget allocation, and then also any tips for doing a dynasty 12-team auction superflex. Startup. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, it seems to be the topic of the day here. So definitely, first and foremost, read the article to anybody who's listening right now. And fortunately, Steven did. But I think he highlights something here. So how do you stick to allocations? Well, I build a spreadsheet. You know, I build a spreadsheet so I can see exactly what percentage I have spent on each position as I'm going through. And, you know, the number one tip that I have for anybody, though, in an auction, other than pay attention, like pay very close attention. Don't let your attention falter. Stay focused. Drink a lot of coffee and stay focused. And don't drink alcohol during an auction would be stick to your market values. So if a player is going to go for much more than your market value, if you have a market value of $45 on a player and all of a sudden you see people bidding at $55, $56, $57, you're out. I mean, that's what I am. I'm out. Because if they spend more on that guy, then I'm going to have better values later in this draft because they're not going to have the ammunition to come at me. So I'll be able to get guys maybe even cheaper than my market values. As far as zero RB, hero RB, those are redraft strategies for snake drafts. They're not auction strategies. Auction is about value. That is what it is about. And now, granted, based on my strategy and my allocations, I don't get two anchor RBs because they always go way too expensive for me based on what I want to spend. I also typically don't just get, I'm not going to end up with like Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb because that'd be way too expensive. Now, the last auction, I did get Tyreek Hill and I spent on value with him, on my market value, but otherwise everybody else's value like below my market cost. So no zero RB, hero RB. As far as Dynasty, the same approach applies. Like and in fact, it's probably even closer to my Dynasty strategy because all I want to do is get value in Dynasty drafts anyway. And based on age, that is the big factor. All right, let me get one more voicemail.
Yeah, Jeff, this is Zach from Detroit. I've been listening since PFF days. Love your content. Love how concise it is. I like it. You know, you're teaching us how to fish, not just catching fish for us. Question, I am in a half-point PPR league, and the format is one quarterback, two running back, two wide receiver, and three flex spots with a tight end and a defense. Now, with my question is three flex spots and half PPR, how would you or would it affect the way that you weigh running back versus wide receiver in the draft? Thank you again, man. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it actually wouldn't change anything. In fact, the league I was just in, Kings Classic League, had three flex spots. Now, granted, we had three wide receiver starting spots, but still, it really doesn't change anything with those flex spots. We're just adding more startable players into the pool. But being that you could start a running back or a wide receiver there, we just keep going, keep on drafting down the board. I don't adjust rankings in that type of format at all. If you had said it was one running back and then three starting wideouts and three flex spots, well, yeah, then I wouldn't really adjust my running back board, but I would go zero RB. You know, that would probably be the only thing, but you have a very straightforward format there. So no, I'm not adjusting it at all. And I appreciate the kind words there. Listening since the PFF days, those are the OGs right there. A lot of people have come into the fold here in the last couple of years, but you know, I appreciate everybody who's been here for every step of the way, or even if you're just hopping on right now, I appreciate you guys as well. If you want to show me that you appreciate me, here's what you can do for me. First and foremost, review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's huge for this show. I want to get this out there more and more. I want to keep doing this. I want to actually do this year round as opposed to taking breaks in the off season. That's the best way to do so. Like, I take breaks in the off season because a lot of people just stop downloading. They unsubscribe. They like unfollow me on Twitter. Like, dude, I'm still here 365 talking football nonstop. And there's always something to talk about. Now, it may not be this volume, may not be four shows a week, but two or three. Like, what's wrong with that, right? The other thing you can do is go to ftnfantasy.com and get a subscription. Use that promo code RATPACK for 10% off. A lot of listeners are subscribers, but not everybody is. You know, there are some goods behind the paywall that I won't talk about on the show. I mean, there has to be for the members over there at FTN. So go check that out. Appreciate everybody on that front. All right, so here's the deal. I'm off tomorrow. I'll be back Thursday and Friday. So we'll do some more pods there. We're heading into this final week of the preseason. Saturday is the biggest fantasy football draft day of the year. And I have a draft on a farm, and I'm making a brisket and coleslaw and all that stuff. It'll be a lot of fun, and maybe I'll do some content on my social media. Of course, I am at Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram. Follow along with me there. Did a little bit of content this past week on Instagram. I know everybody wants the videos and the pics. Got to see what this the whole farm league looks like. Maybe, just maybe, I'll show you those too. All right. So like I said, then I'll be back on Thursday for another edition of the pod. I'll catch you on the flip side. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.